Case number 20-5168, Leslie Clample v. Johnson & Johnson Healthcare et al. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Richard Baker Jr. for the appellant.
Thank you. You can go ahead, sir.
Are you ready for me? Okay.
Yeah.
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Baker here. I have the honor of representing Leslie Clable today in this appeal. I think we can boil this case down to one simple question, and that is, how do we determine the date of injury for statute of repose purposes? All the legal issues in this case revolve around that one question. So I want to spend my time talking about number one, that is a jury question. It's a fact intensive question.
Well, it is, unless the record decides it as a matter of law.
I agree with that. So the question is there anything in this record which establishes as a matter of law that the date of injury was 2006 as determined by the district court, and that there was an injury that occurred then caused by this product? And we say there is no evidence in the record that supports all three of those requirements.
Would you agree, as the court said in Parton, which, you know, obviously has some similarities to this case, the factual circumstances could be different, obviously. But there we said, for purposes of summary judgment, which is what the district court granted here, the defendants bore the burden of demonstrating as a matter of law that plaintiff's injuries from the device were present before the 6-year period for the statute of repose. Are we on common ground with that?
I think we are.
Well, I guess in your case, and the question I would have for you, sir, is the record here is a bit different. Your fact sheet that you had to fill out in the MDL proceeding, and which serves, as I understand it, as interrogatory, the equivalent of interrogatory responses, said that your client noticed some tape from the device starting to protrude from her tissue, I believe, and she actually has the device removed in 2006, which is more than 6 years before the suit was brought. And the suit was brought to say that very device, if I understand the case correctly, that device was defective. And so how would we not say that she was injured by a device that had been protruding from her tissue and that was removed more than 6 years before the suit was brought?
I would say, two things. Number one, what was the cause of that device protruding? Was it by then, as early then, that the mesh had eroded, which is the defect in this case, and caused it to protrude? Or was it implanted incorrectly? It could be either. And there's no proof either way in this record which it was. So number one, I think there has to be some proof that the defect that we're suing over caused that protrusion in 2006.
So in at the time the tape was protruding and the device had to be removed, you're saying at that time she had not suffered the pain and the injury that you allege is what the device ultimately caused. So just the protrusion of the tape, while there may have been some defect, did not create an injury at that point. Is that your argument?
Well, I'd say there is no proof that it did, number one. But number two, that tape protruding could have been caused by a surgeon error in the implantation of the device itself that early on. It could have been caused by any number of things, not necessarily related to the defect in the product, which is the burden that they would have to carry in order to be granted summary judgment.
Mr. Baker, the district court granted summary judgment as opposed to dismissing the complaint or dismissing the case on the pleadings. And so, I mean, if on the one hand there's record evidence that really would strongly indicate that the device was defective, that it was causing your client an injury before the statute of repose period. It would seem like if you want to advance a theory that no, that it's not the device was defective. Yes, it's coming out of her tissue, but it's not defective. Maybe it was the doctor's fault when the doctor implanted the device. We're at the summary judgment stage, and why wasn't it your burden at that point, if you want to advance a theory to counter what seems to be kind of fairly obvious otherwise, why wasn't it your burden to come forward with evidence creating a genuine issue that, hey, really, it might have been a jury could find that it was a doctor's fault, as opposed to there's something wrong with the device?
Well, I think that is an issue for trial for the jury to determine.
Not always. Rule 56, you know, has a role. And when we get to this point of the case, you've got to actually have some evidence.
I agree.
That would allow a jury. So how would a jury on this record say it wasn't that the device was defective, it was that the surgeon misimplanted it? What evidence would a jury base that finding?
There's nothing in this record at this time for that proposition.
Okay, that's a significant concession here.
Well, I think though that I don't have that burden at this time to establish my defenses and the causation defenses unless they first meet their burden of establishing that an injury caused by the defect and this product caused my client an injury in 2006, then that would shift the burden to me. But at this
why was the device taken out in 2006?
There was some exposure of the mesh is all that is in the record. And that is from my client's admission and for interrogatory answer. But the cause of that exposure of the mesh, was it implanted improperly? Was it improperly implanted? And that is a normal thing to occur.
She was complaining about something sharp, you know? I mean, her sexual partner was complaining about something sharp. This is before the limit or the repose period, if I understand the record correctly.
It was in 2006.
Okay, so, I mean, it would seem obvious that she, at that time, has suffered an injury as a result of the device. That, in my mind, perhaps indisputable. And then the question is, well, is that injury resulting from the device being defective, or is it resulting from the device being implanted improperly? And, I mean, if the device is coming out of her, it would seem like there's something wrong with it. And this case just seems very different than the Parton case.
Well, I agree with you. It seems like there is something wrong. I don't agree with there is something wrong with it. Yes, and so she went back to the doctor, but she was never told when she went back to the doctors, and there's nothing in, they've taken the doctor's deposition. There's nothing to establish that she was told that there was a problem with these meshes, or that it was implanted improperly, or that this is just a normal occurrence with some of these. It wasn't until later that it began to erode and reemerge as a larger problem and a significant injury to her. There could be two separate injuries, in other words. One occurring early on, if you want to look at the 06 problem as an injury, but then there was the second time after it began to erode and she had to have it explanted. that it became a real injury to her. And like I said, there is no proof early on that it was a product defect, only that it had to be trimmed away because it had entered the vaginal mesh. But that doesn't mean it's a problem with the product itself. It could just been implanted too close to the vaginal wall. We don't know the answer to that in this record. So given that it's their burden to establish that the defect caused an injury in 06, I don't think they've met that burden.
Okay, well, I appreciate your answer.
Any other questions I can answer? I think my time has expired.
Oh, it went quickly. any other questions? No? All right. Thank you, sir. You will have your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from defense counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Susanna Moldovenu, and I represent the appellees Johnson & Johnson and Ethicon. Your Honor, Judge Kethledge has touched on this already, but I'd like to first discuss the Parton decision a bit and why this case is so remarkably different factually from the Parton case. In Parton, the only evidence of injury that was at issue for statute of repose purposes was the plaintiff's subjective complaints of generalized pelvic pain. This was a condition that Ms. Parton had had before her mesh implant, and it had worsened after her mesh implant. The court in Parton found that the plaintiff's testimony about that pain only established that she had the pain, but not that the pain was caused by the mesh. That is not the situation we have here. Here, the undisputed evidence, which plaintiff's counsel here today still does not dispute, is that in March of 2006, the plaintiff discovered that she had a mesh erosion in her vaginal canal. A mesh erosion is where a portion of the mesh will migrate into another organ. In this instance, the mesh had migrated through the vaginal wall and was in the plaintiff's vaginal space. The plaintiff testified that she could feel the mesh erosion with her hand and that her sexual partner complained that the eroded mesh had scratched him during intercourse. The plaintiff went to her doctor and he diagnosed her with a mesh erosion and then recommended that she have surgery to remove the mesh. She understood that this would be a surgery to remove the entire device.
Counsel, during that time when she discovered the mesh erosion, did she complain at that time of severe pain from that mesh?
She complained of increasing pain, urinary incontinence, and then also the mesh exposure.
Okay.
And then in April of 2006, she underwent a surgery to remove the eroded mesh. Plaintiff filed this, and she was hospitalized for that surgery. Plaintiff filed this lawsuit more than 7 years after that surgery in 2013. Her claims are therefore barred by the Tennessee Products Liability Act 6-year statute of repose. Now, none of these facts are in dispute. If a surgery and a hospitalization to treat a complication is not an injury under the TPLA, it's really difficult to conceive what would be.
Ms. Moldovano, if I may ask you a question. I think I understand Mr. Baker's argument this morning to be that, well, you know, maybe in 2006, she did have an injury related to the mesh, but it might have been an injury that resulted from defective implantation rather than from a defect in the mesh itself. And I guess I would ask for your response to that, given that, I mean, as I understand it, you need to show as a matter of law that an injury from the defective device or from a defect was existed more than 6 years before the suit was brought.
And as Your Honor mentioned, there's nothing in the plaintiff's opposition to their motion for summary judgment that would suggest as much. You know, the court is at summary judgment obligated to give the plaintiff all reasonable inferences from the facts and the undisputed facts, but there's no basis in these facts here for any such inference. And in any event, the plaintiff has sued based on a failure to warn theory as well as a defective product theory, that she wasn't warned about all of the risks of this device. And so, you know, we take this complaint as it arrives to the court. She has alleged that this is her injury. And the defendant is not under a duty at summary judgment to do more than establish when her injuries began under the TPLA. The defendant does not have to preemptively rule out alternative theories that have never been presented to the court. So all the defendant must do under the TPLA is establish the date of injury. If the plaintiff wishes to, in opposition to the summary judgment, come forward with some alternative basis for why that doesn't apply, under Rule 56, that was the time to do so.
Okay, thank you.
I'd also like to, you know, walk through a little bit the plaintiff's admissions that are contained in the plaintiff fact sheet. If the court looks at the plaintiff fact sheet question number 6, really everything that the court needs to decide the application of the statute of repose is contained in that interrogatory response, which is the plaintiff fact sheet response number 6. The plaintiff was asked, do you claim that you suffer bodily injuries? The answer is yes. It says, describe your injuries. The plaintiff describes exactly what the injuries she claims here are. Perforated vaginal wall, that is the mesh erosion. Bladder infections, hematuria, emotional distress, inability to enjoy sexual relations, incontinence, vaginal discharge. The second question, when is the first time you experienced symptoms of any of the bodily injuries you claim in your lawsuit to have resulted from the pelvic mesh product? So there is an admission from the plaintiff that this is her own allegation that these injuries resulted from the mesh product. So the claim that we have to establish the causation, the plaintiff has acknowledged that in this interrogatory response when she says, during 2006, I continued to have incontinence, but did not know the reason. Then the plaintiff was asked in subsection F, are you currently seeing any doctor? She says she, and then it says her list, all the doctors that she's seen for any of the bodily injuries that she's listed above in this lawsuit. She lists that she saw Dr. Klein and that she was asked what was the condition treated. She says continuing problems with the mesh and that the date was 2006. Then subsection G, were you hospitalized at any time for the bodily injuries you listed above? Again, this is the plaintiff's admission that these were the bodily injuries that were caused by the mesh. She says, yes, she was hospitalized at Park West Hospital in Knoxville, Tennessee for the partial removal and re-sling in 2006. So all of these admissions clearly provide everything that the TPLA requires for the statute of repose to apply.
Thank you.
If the court has no more questions, I'll cede the remainder of my time.
I guess I would just ask, is there anything that you would like to emphasize from Ms. Claybo's deposition testimony? Is there anything you think is especially important?
As I said, everything is contained in that interrogatory response number 6. Mm-hmm. In her deposition, the plaintiff really just expounds on it all more and provides some more detailed description of it. So in 2000, in her deposition, she describes in greater detail exactly how this impacted her sexual relationship, the fact that her partner could feel the eroded mesh during sexual intercourse. That's described in the deposition. She describes in her deposition, you know, the timing of when she went to see Dr. Klein. Also that she understood that she was having the mesh entirely removed at that point. And you know, just she describes in greater detail that diagnosis. So the deposition is just provides more detail, which expounds on everything that's contained in her plaintiff fact sheet responses.
All right, thank you. Any questions from Judge Donald, Judge Larson at this point?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Moldovano, thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
I'll hear a rebuttal from Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Your Honors. First, I want to make 2 points. Number one, we have to remember that when this surgery was performed in 2006, the mesh that was exposed for whatever reason was trimmed away, and there was no other problems until much later on when she had to go back, because at that time, the mesh had then, by defect, eroded and required an explant.
Well, Mr. Baker, I mean, your client's answer to interrogatory 6B from the fact sheet just seems to say otherwise. I mean, the question posed by what I'm calling an interrogatory is, when is the first time you experienced symptoms of any of the bodily injuries you claim in your lawsuit to have resulted from the pelvic mesh products? And your client answers 2006, and she goes on and describes that. So in 2006, according to your client, this is an admission in the case, she experienced symptoms of some of the injuries, you know, that taps into the language of the statute of repose, that she claims in her suit were the result of the mesh products, not the result of implantation, but result of the mesh products. I mean, why, by any common sense reading of this, is this not simply an admission that she had the injuries she's complaining about now in 2006? I'm really not seeing a way not to read it that way.
Well, it could be read that way from a lay person's opinion, but just as observed in the Parton case, Mrs. Clabo is not competent to make the causation between the product.
It's different, though. I mean, in the Parton case, the defendant was relying upon the plaintiff's deposition testimony and attributing to her a statement that she thought the mesh caused the harm at some date prior to when the statute of repose period would begin. In this case, we have what counts as an admission, an interrogatory response, a flat out admission that I had my injuries from this product in 2006.
Well, but if you read the whole statement, it says also, I did not know the cause.
Well, but she's saying it doesn't matter if she knew the cause, just like it didn't matter in Parton, whether the plaintiff understood at the time that the cause was the product. That just doesn't matter. She's saying that in 2006, she had an injury. One of the injuries she's complained of, she had then from this product. Wasn't true. We just had nothing like that in the Parton case.
But she said she had symptoms. What are the symptoms you attribute to? Now, is she attributing those symptoms to the implantation of the mesh?
Yes, she is. By 6B.
Well, again, is it the implantation of the mesh, the fact that the mesh is uncomfortable and eroding? The symptoms aren't the same as an injury in and of itself. There's got to be proof of when the actual injury from the defect occurred.
When did you experience symptoms of any of the bodily injuries you claim in your suit? I mean, that means, when did you have symptoms caused by the injuries? I mean, symptoms are not detached from the injuries. The symptoms result from the injuries.
I understand, but she states clearly there, I didn't know the cause. She was trying to be very broad in her answer. When did I have any of these kind of symptoms? They began in 06.
Mr. Baker, you say that the injury occurred in 2011 or 2012. And one of the things you point to is when a doctor, not a treating physician, but another doctor, told her it was likely connected to the mesh. So the symptoms that she had in 2011 or 12, how are they different than what she had in 2006? Because it seems like the real key thing you point to is all of a sudden a physician, non-treating physician, says it's the mesh.
Well, that is when she learned what was causing her, related her symptoms to the mesh, was in 11 or 12. And that is also when the mesh began to erode and reemerge after the 06 surgery. It reemerged, and the testimony in the deposition is with that non-treating physician, who was her boyfriend, that he began to feel the mesh reemerging through the vaginal wall.
Okay, so but those conditions, those symptoms were not atypical of the ones that she experienced in 2006, were they?
I don't think they are. Well, they were different in the sense that it was repaired in the first instance and no allegation by the doctor being told you have erosion in this mesh.
Well, later, I mean, even though they were repaired, the symptoms were not different from the symptoms that resulted in the need to repair. That's the point, right?
Well, that's right. But what was the cause of the need to repair? Improper implantation, product defect, other causes. The burden of proof is on the defendant to show it was the product defect at that time and that was the cause. We've got to have both elements to get summary judgment, not just one or the other. But you've got to have the association between the defect occurring in 06 and not some other cause. The proof of the defect came when we could prove the erosion and that the erosion had caused the entrance through the vaginal wall. Why it had entered the vaginal wall before, nothing in the record.
Well, I mean, you know, if we look at these same fact sheet responses, I mean, there's this block Excel kind of spreadsheet thing. We don't have page numbers on this document. It's at the end of the answers to the subparts of question 6, the one we've just been talking about. Okay. And it says provider name and address, condition treated, approximate dates, condition treated, continuing problems with mesh, approximate dates of treatment, 2006. I mean, everything's pointing to 2006. Yep. That she's having all kinds of problems, and there's zero in this record to support the idea that it was an implantation problem.
Well, it's not our burden of proof at this stage.
Well,
they've got to meet their burden of proof that it was a defect that caused the injury. If they never meet their burden of proof, we have no burden to come forward.
Well, maybe they do meet it because of these admissions. You know, I mean, we put the question to a jury on this record. Did she have an injury from a defect in the product in 2006? I mean, you know, as opposed to installation, they would have no basis to say the implantation. They would say, well, you know, there was a problem with the mesh and it's not the implantation.
On just this record, I would agree with you, but this isn't the trial record. This is the record at the summary judgment stage where they made the record they tried to make, but they still have to meet the minimum burden, which is to associate the product and its defect to 06 injury.
So, Mr. Baker, just going back to basics, I know at the summary judgment stage, you have got to demonstrate that there is a genuine issue as to a material fact. And here with the statute of repose, there's got to be some showing that the injury occurred somewhere other than 2006. So how do you phrase that genuine issue, and how do you, and just succinctly, how do you phrase it in a way that gets you out of that statute? Because it's tough.
Well, the issue I think for the jury would be something, when does the proof show a product defect occurred which caused an injury to Leslie Clabo, and when did that occur?
Okay, but if you don't get beyond the statute of repose, the jury never gets that.
Well, the only way we don't get beyond the statute of repose is if someone else affixes the date of injury. When that injury occurred is a question of fact. If my client can't affix that as the date of injury, because she can't associate what was going on with a product defect.
If she admitted, I was hurt by this product in 2006.
She admits that she was having problems with the product.
She admits she has an injury. I mean, that's just, there's no other way to read
it. She admits really a complication that it has become exposed. Is that exposure? What is the cause of that exposure? Nothing in the record other than it became exposed. That doesn't necessarily mean the product became exposed because of a defect. It could be implanted too shallow. Any number of things can be a cause of the exposure.
Well, I think, Mr. Baker, I think you got the record for rebuttal time in this case, 10 minutes of rebuttal time. That's why it went so quickly in the first part. I didn't realize it at the time. Any other questions from Judge Donald or Judge Larson?
No.
All right. If I may, Mr. Baker, while you're on the line here, do you know how many more of these cases are sort of percolating down in Tennessee? Obviously, it's my second one in 6 months.
Many.
Many in federal court in Tennessee?
Yes, they're just coming back.
Okay. From the MDF.
Right.
Your Honor, if I could also speak on that. There have been many remanded from the MDL. I'm not aware of any other case where the district court has granted summary judgment on the statute of repose. So you won't be seeing another statute of repose case for the next little while.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of what I was driving at. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you both for your arguments. We appreciate it. The case will be submitted and the clerk may call the next case.